Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager in a particularly chipper mood. Chipper. Now, for all of you watching outside of the United States, would you know what chipper is? Would you know what chipper is? It's an American slang, I think. I wonder, did the Brits use chipper? Anyway, I'm particularly feisty and... Uh-oh. He's not in a chipper mood. He stopped. That's so interesting. It's actually a good sign, because I think the background snoring can be distracting. Anyway, hi, everybody. I'm Dennis Prager. This is my home. This is my fire. This is my dog, Otto. Many of you write to me asking that I give him a rub or say hello. Oh, there he is again. I seem to put him to sleep. It's a humbling factor in my life, but nevertheless a fun one. So what is the purpose of the Fireside Chat? It is to offer you some thoughts, completely unscripted, so you'll know me and my ideas better, and I get questions from you, from literally all over the world. We have questions now from 52 countries, and that's just the questions. That's not the number of listeners outside of America, which is great, because what I've always believed, it's not possible to have a good value system, but it's only applicable to one culture. Either it's universally applicable or it's not applicable to anybody. It's like I always say, you know, it would be like saying Beethoven is only good for German audiences. That's absurd. They love Beethoven in Japan as much as they love him in Germany, because he has something in his music that's universal. So I hope the same about anything that I talk about. So I think we were thinking about what should I open up today and before I take your questions. So in the course of all these fireside chats, sometimes I come up with an idea and I ask Megan, are you the producer? Is that your official title?
Unofficially.
She is the unofficial de facto producer of the fireside chat. And by the way, she's terrific. You're terrific. I'm touched.
Yeah.
I am. I really am. Well, thank you. But it's the truth. And so is Rodrigo, who's behind the camera now. I'm very lucky to have these two people. I am. Because I know, this is an interesting topic too. I know when I'm lucky. That's one of the greatest gifts you could have in your life, is to walk around thinking, ooh, I'm lucky. But you know what you've been taught? If you're a young person, at least in America, you've been taught to think you're unlucky. That's one of the unbelievably unforgivable damaging things the left has done to people, is teach them to be unhappy. Because if you're happy, you don't vote left. It's as simple as that. Think about it. If you think society has been good to you, then... you don't need to be saved by a political party. That's why it's so important. This is not even what I wanted to talk about, but I'll get into it for a moment anyway. That is why, I mean, think, it's so nefarious. It is so dark. The idea, oh, you're a woman? You are oppressed. You need the Democratic Party. You need our help, because it's a patriarchy and you're suffering. I mean, for an American woman to think that she is suffering because she is living in America is, forgive me, sick. It's just sick. You are so lucky. Everybody here is lucky. Everybody in most of your countries listening today, we are the healthiest people in the history of the world. We are the most affluent people in the history of the world. We are going to live longer than anyone in the history of the world. And yet the amount of unhappiness, there was an article in the New York Times just the last week or two about suicide among young Americans. And this is not poor Americans who are committing suicide, middle class, upper class. Why is that happening? I'll address that in one of these fireside chats. It's a powerful thing, happiness. And gratitude and thinking how lucky you are. So it's a great little test in your life I don't care what age you are, if you're young or old or middle, it doesn't matter. How often do you think, boy, am I lucky? Think about it. Mark it down for the next week. Just, you know, keep a little either piece of paper in your pocket or your purse or whatever, and or just on your phone, and mark down every time you think you're lucky, and add it up at the end of the week. I'll bet for a lot of people it's zero. Think about how often you think you're unlucky. Mark that down too. When I fly constantly, because I go around the world lecturing, but so I know, for example, it is inevitable that I am going to be on a canceled flight. And I hate canceled flights. It throws off everything. But I know that it's not possible to fly as much as I do and not have a canceled flight or a heavily delayed flight. And that's it. I remember one time it was canceled, and I was trying to get back to Los Angeles where I live, and I was at Chicago Airport, and the flight was canceled, so I couldn't get home, and I just had to stay in Chicago overnight. I didn't want to do that. Nothing against Chicago. I didn't want to stay anywhere overnight. I wanted to get home, but I just realized that this is par for the course. This is an inevitable part of flying enough. That's how you have to look at it. You get, I developed that idea as a kid with flat tires. I just assumed that everybody gets a certain quota of flat tires in their life. And I remember the time I got it, it was freezing. I was driving from Toronto to New York. I was still living in New York in my early 20s. And I was driving back from a conference in Toronto, and it's a long drive, and it was freezing. I mean, it's very cold in the winter in Canada, obviously. And, you know, in the middle of nowhere, I got a flat tire, and I was changing the tire. I didn't even have gloves, which is really stupid. So my hands were freezing. But I just realized, okay, this is my quota for flat tires. It's a very important way to go through life. To realize, you know, you're going to get the flu every so often. You're going to get a flat tire. You're going to get a canceled flight. It's just, it's why my chapter on expectations in my book on happiness is it would be a very helpful one for those of you who care about being happy, which I assume is most of you. My book is called Happiness, a Serious Problem. I'm not here to sell books, but it would be a little irresponsible for me not to tell you I've actually written a book on happiness, and it could really help you. And it's pretty cheap. It's a paperback. Anyway, that was about feeling lucky. So the topic I wanted to talk about, so the question is, do I go to questions or should I talk about the topic?
Talk about the topic.
Yeah. I look to Megan. It's like I don't have a mind of my own. Isn't that interesting? I'm looking at my drug dealer. He's over there he's in the room. He's visiting today. I call him my drug dealer. He's actually my audio dealer. But I admit to being addicted to audio equipment because I'm crazy about music. And I have been addicted to audio equipment since high school. There's actually, I look at the questions prior to the broadcast, and there is actually one on that. So I'll wait for a moment. So what I was going to talk about, which could be a long talk, but I'll keep it brief.
Let's do questions.
Go to the questions, but I'll tell you anyway, I can't leave you hanging. So I'm going to do this in a maybe the next time even, but it's something that is really serious and really important, and that is this. Everybody is wounded in some way, emotionally, psychologically, everybody. That is part of the human condition. And when you realize that, it calms you because you realize it's normal. And part of the unhappiness of life is thinking that you have been dealt an unfair hand. But if you realize that everybody's wounded in some way, maybe you haven't been dealt an unfair hand. Maybe it's just part of life that there will be wounds. So I'll talk about that another time, but it's something for you to register now. Okay, let's take a look. Let's go to your questions. And we begin with a video question. Oh, it's, look at that. Okay. All right, here we go.
Hey, Dennis, my name is Kirk Brower. I am a Fordham student and a Prager Force member from New York. And my question is, what kind of audio equipment would you recommend for a college student on a budget?
Is that awesome? I'm looking at my dealer. He's cracking up. He wants the guy's number because he wants to sell him some goods right now. That's really funny. So, okay, this may not sound like to many of you, this is not really something on your mind. I want to put it in your mind. You should be with me when a person who has never heard a good system, a good audio system, hears music they love on my system. They have literally never heard anything like it. So it's revelatory. You see, a lot of you who are under, I would even say 30, have grown up with earbuds. And you think, oh, wow, you know, iPhone earbuds. Oh, I love my music through iPhone earbuds or maybe your car system. But you've never heard what good sound sounds like. And then when you do, you go, wow, why am I listening to earbuds if I could listen to music that fills a room with beauty? Whatever type of music you like. So your question is apropos. All of you should give a try to hear what it sounds like. And get your favorite music. Don't listen to another genre. Listen to what you love. Because then you'll realize how good it could sound. What should you do if you're on a budget? This is what I did. Because I fell in love with music in high school, and therefore I fell in love with audio equipment. But I had no money. I mean, I had money for lunch. My parents gave me lunch money. That was my money, lunch money. And I think I got an allowance. I don't know if kids still get an allowance. Do kids get an allowance? What does a high school senior do for money? I mean, the parents must give them something. They're not, in most cases, earning, which would be a nice thing to do. But anyway, my father, I don't know what he gave me, but he was pretty generous, actually, which was a wonderful thing. And I, as soon as I had any money, and it was lunch money, I bought concert tickets and audio equipment. And what I did was I went without lunch, because you could easily go without lunch. Look, at this time in my life, for now a year and a half, I do intermittent fasting, so I, at the most, eat two meals a day. I never eat three meals a day. At the most, two, sometimes one. I'm not hungry. Not everybody could do this. I fast between 16 and 20 hours a day. I do have coffee with not sweetener, but some milk or almond milk or whatever. That's I have. So it's never been a problem for me to miss a meal. I mean, I ain't thin, obviously, but that's the way I'm made. It's not because of the way I eat. I was that way from, I think, birth. Anyway, I spent my money on audio equipment and forwent lunch. That's what you should do. One other thing, Prager rule. Everybody thinks speakers is the most important and the biggest thing. That's where you should spend nearly all your money. I don't agree. All speakers are good. Some are better than others, obviously, but they're all good. The electronics are what make the speakers great. So you should think about that in terms of the amplifier and other things that you'll use to make your sound. Garbage in, garbage out. A great speaker with lousy electronics sounds lousy because it is accurately broadcasting junk. All right, next question from Australia. Michael, Sydney, Australia. Hello, Michael, 22 years old. I feel like a failure in life. I have no girlfriend. Then he puts in parentheses, wife-to-be. What does that mean? He doesn't have a serious girlfriend. I'm failing university, and I always feel a sense of inferiority towards those around me. How do I get out of this? There really is only one way that I can think of immediately. I'm a behaviorist. I think that behavior is much more important than feelings because behavior shapes feelings. Don't work on your feelings. Work on your behavior. If you act better, you'll feel better. Do something. If you feel inferior, do something that makes you feel less inferior or even superior. I don't mean to all other human beings. That's sick. But superior to now. So university is not for everybody. A lot of terrific people didn't go to university. A lot of the greatest minds in history didn't. A lot of the greatest inventors and explorers. See what you can do well, and then you will not feel inferior. Who knows what it is? Maybe it has to do with botany. Maybe it has to do with welding. Who knows what it is? Maybe you're God's gift to plumbing. Whatever you do well, that will make you feel less inferior. You have to do something well, but you have to work at it. You should all hear. I should have Alan Estrin on again. We had him on for the 100th broadcast, but that wasn't about Alan. Alan is the guy who really came up with the Prager University ideas, dear friend of mine, for 30 years. And I mean, truly dear friend. It's a gift. He's a gift in my life. And he has a theory about his life. It's very interesting. He said he realized, and I don't even agree with him, but it doesn't matter. This is the way he looked at life. Starting in high school, he said, I realized I had no special gift or talent. That if I was going to do well in life, it's going to have to be through self-discipline and hard work. And I committed to self-discipline and hard work. And he's, of course, an immense success. Immense. Now, I don't agree with him that he doesn't have any special gift, but it's irrelevant. It's truly irrelevant. There are people with special gifts, they don't work hard and nothing happens. No matter what, if you have a special gift or don't have a special gift, it's still self-discipline and hard work. That's what you should start doing. Don't waste time. I mean, of course, you have to play. Life demands a certain amount of time for play. Otherwise, you'll go crazy. But don't waste a lot of time. Let's put it that way. Do hard work. Get good at something. And that will change the way in which you see yourself. Okay. Arian, 41, Upland, California. Hi, Dennis. I just love your fireside chats. Me too. And truly appreciate your words and your servant's spirit. That is what I have, actually. I was wondering what you think about conspiracy theories, both the word itself and the information it attempts to dissemble. P.S. Please give Otto a belly rub and a treat. He's such a good boy. Well, I give him plenty of belly rubs, and I did on camera. And of course, those who don't like me really hit that. Oh, look, he's rubbing the dog. Like, this, well, something's wrong with rubbing the dog? I don't even understand. But I don't want to wake him up. That's the issue. Which might not be an issue with Otto, actually, now that I think of it. Okay. What do I think of conspiracy theories? Overwhelmingly, I've never bought them. Does that mean there are no conspiracies? Yeah, there were some. I'll give you an example. In American history, the assassination of President John F. Kennedy in 1963, there are those who believe that there was a conspiracy to hide the fact that more than one person killed him. shot him. I don't believe that. Okay? I don't believe that conspiracies... I have not lived to see 10, 20, 30 years later something no one knew. All of a sudden it comes out this was a conspiracy. There's too much knowledge today. It's hard to hide a conspiracy. That's not to say that no group ever conspires to do something, but I generally don't buy it. Marty, 60, Manila, Philippines. Hi, Dennis. I am a retired U.S. Navy chief living abroad. I love your chats and PragerU. Thank you. My question regards Judaism. I recently had an ethnically but not religious Jewish person tell me that Jews don't believe in hell. Is that true? Yes, a lot of Jews don't believe in hell. However, there is nothing in common between what most Jews believe and Judaism. That's what you have to realize. Those are two separate questions. What do Jews believe is question one. What does Judaism believe is question two. And usually they're not the same. Because as you point out, Jews are not only a religion. Christians are a religion. Muslims are a religion. Buddhists are a religion. Jews are a people and a religion. So you could be an atheist Jew. You can't be an atheist Christian. Can't be an atheist Muslim. But you can be an atheist Jew because it's a people. Just like Americans are a people. There are atheist Americans and there are believing Americans and so on. So, yes, he's right. Most Jews don't believe in hell. Most Jews believe when you die, bye-bye, baby. It's all over. This tiny, tiny window of life is over, shut for eternity. Judaism does not believe that. Judaism believes that there is an afterlife. Of course there's an afterlife. If God is good, A, if there is a God, and B, God is just, of course there's an afterlife because there's so little justice in this life. And anyway, God is not physical, so obviously the physical can't be the only reality. Now, if there's no God, there is no afterlife. I fully acknowledge that. But I don't know how you can believe in God and not believe that there's an afterlife. That doesn't make any sense. I have a whole essay on the afterlife on the internet. I have a PragerU video on the afterlife. So I have addressed this my whole life. When I was a kid, I realized how important that subject was. But never confuse what Jews believe with Judaism. Sometimes they are the same. Most of the time, they're not. Terry, 68, Parma, Ohio. Dear Mr. Prager, during episode 112 of your Fireside Chats, we've done 112? That's amazing. 116. You stated that, quote, you have a calm nature, but I also work at it. Unquote. I was wondering if you would please reveal what you do to help yourself be more calm. God bless you. Please give Otto a what ho for me. What does what ho mean?
Casual. Hi there.
What ho, Otto? All right. He was moved. So, yes, I do work on calm. That's correct. I try to only let very bad things, this is an example, I try to let only really bad things disturb my calm. Evil disturbs my calm. But generally what happens to me in my life, I have, as I said, I walk around thinking I'm lucky 99% of the time, even when unfortunate things happen, and they do. I've had some really tough times in life, believe it or not, which is why I wrote a book called Happiness is a Serious Problem. If happiness was effortless for me, I could not have written a book with that title. I work at it. And you have to work at it. So, yes, I work to stay calm. That is correct. I more than even happiness, I've always wanted peace of mind. And I'll give you one little, I mean, all of this is off the top of my head, but I'll give you an example. When I was in high school, I made the school basketball team. Now, I made it for only one reason. I was the tallest kid in the high school. I had no talent. I am not Mr. Humility, and I'm not Mr. Arrogance. I'm Mr. Real. I know what I have, and I know what I don't have. One of the things I didn't have was basketball ability. There were kids who were like half a foot shorter than me who jumped higher than me. I'm just to give an example. I didn't run fast. And not only that, I didn't even like basketball. I liked other sports. I played tennis. I liked racket sports. And I was pretty good at that. Just pretty good. Never great, but pretty good. Anyway, the coach of the team at the last tryout for becoming a member of the team said the following: we're going to have a really bad year this year. I could tell because we really scraped the bottom of the barrel. Prager made the team. I'll never forget that. Scraped the bottom of the barrel. For those of you not where English is not your native language, in other words, we really had very poor choices. And if Prager made the team, it's clear we're not a very good team. And I remember, as God is my witness, my reaction. I had two reactions. One, this guy is a schmuck. I can't use these words, but you can imagine what I thought, what this guy is. He's a lowlife. But I had another reaction, equally strong. He's right. I knew he was right. If the team picked me, it was going to be a lousy team. I did not deserve to be on that team. But I was so tall compared to the other kids in my high school that unless I was in a wheelchair, I was going to make the team. But it was not a good sign for the team that I made the team. I knew that. So being real has helped me be calm. I don't get hurt easily. That's an example. People walk around there and like in perpetual states of hurt. How did this person look at me? What did this person say? And my first question when I'm insulted, this is really uncommon, but it's a good thing to do. I don't ask, oh my God, how hurt am I? I ask, is there any truth to what they said? I am so attacked on the internet. A lot of it is really just a reflection on the low level of the attackers. Still, I try to see, is there anything, even with all of their nonsense, is there anything that I could do better in the way I present my ideas, rather than, oh, I'm insulted? So if you don't walk around insulted, that's calming. If you walk around thinking you're lucky, that's very calming. These all contribute. And I must say, believing in God, not that God, I don't believe God is going to bail me out of problems. God is not my butler. I am God's butler. That is, I've never, ever thought, oh, God will bail me out. Most people's God is sort of a servant in heaven. I don't have that. So the calm that God gives me is not that he'll bail me out of problems or save my life or cure a disease if I get one. That is not how I look at God at all. But knowing that there is a God and believing that God is good, that is calming. That in the final analysis, if not in this life, then in an afterlife, there will be good. That is very calming to me. Believing that I'm not saying when I die, I will not be saying an eternal goodbye to my loved ones. That's very calming. That stuff is calming. Not that God will bail me out of problems. If I'm on a plane that's falling, I don't believe God's going to save me and not the others. It doesn't even occur to me. But knowing that there is a God, and therefore, in the final analysis, there is a goodness that will prevail. And as I said, that I will be reunited with loved ones. That's incredibly calming to me. I think the secular age produces less calm people. I do believe that. I think it's a big factor in the amount of suicide. I would be very interested if synagogue and church-going young people commit suicide as much as young people who don't have any religion in their lives. That would be an interesting study to make, but they don't make it because our academics are almost all secular, so they don't think in these terms. What's our timing?
30.
I tell you, I have a built-in clock, don't I? That was 30, so I think I should say goodbye, because another question will take 5 more minutes. And I'd rather have you want me to speak more than go, oh my God, he's droning on. Well, anyway, I love being with you. I love the reactions. I love your questions. I hope you'll show these to others, because these can be, and they're meant to be, life-changing ideas. That's the reason I do this work. That gives me calm, the belief that I'm doing some good with my life. That too, I have to say, that is a source of calm. Okay, everybody, I'm Dennis Prager. Thanks for being with me. See you next week. My dealer is applauding.
That was awesome.
Thank you for watching. If you'd like to keep these fireside chats free, please do by donating to PragerU.